today, we're going to bring some sunshine in the space. We're talking to the folks over at the Lincoln Park Conservatory. Matthew Barrett's joining us. Jason Toth is joining us. We're going to learn about everything they got going on in the world of floral artistry and their 2017 spring show that's coming. Spring Rising is either here. I need some of that Spring Rising happening right now. The day is beautiful. It'd be great to get out there right now, as a matter of fact. Then after that, we're talking to a famous restaurateur, consultant, an attorney who's turned so many great iconic restaurants around here and started a few you may know, like Vivo, Marche, Giocco, Bar Roma in Andersonville, which is a restaurant I designed. Howard Davis is going to be here in studio talking about, you know, what it takes to really make a restaurant rock, make it successful. It's one of the toughest businesses to be in. And, you know, Howard has the golden Midas touch in restaurants. We're going to talk about how it all comes together from the design to the front end to the back of the house. And then later on, we're going to continue our conversation with restaurants with David Suarez from now, Dave, help me out here.
La Tequileria.
La Tequileria.
Tequila?
Tequileria.
Yep.
And that's a new spot that's opening up whereabouts?
It's in Melrose Park. It's opening up next week. And you'll speak better Spanish once you taste
the cocktails. After a few tequilas, I will be speaking fluent Spanish. Today, we're bringing a little bit of light into our lives. And we're going to do it through some smell, too. And it's nothing bad, by the way. I have two gentlemen and a woman in the room. We're joined by Matthew Barrett, Deputy Director of Conservatories, and Jason Toth, floriculturist. Jason, correct me here. Floriculturist?
Floriculturist.
Culturist, because that's spelt wrong. That's what it is, Dave. Like Anchorman over here. I'm just reading stuff. Put it in front of me. I'll just read it. From the Garfield Park Conservatory. Gentlemen, thank you. And we're being joined by a third, or are you just hanging out?
Just hanging out.
She's in the Park District.
Jason's parole officer.
Oh, nice. Good. Well, welcome. We can remove the handcuffs. This is a safe area. Guys, thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate
it. Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Gorgeous day out there. And you guys brought some of the beauty inside with you. So beautiful array of spring. Is this kind of the preempt to what we're going to see at the spring show?
It's a small sampling. There is just an abundance of flowers that will kind of make your head spin when you walk in the room. And the great thing about the spring shows at both conservatories is they open in February. So when it's just gray and just awful outside and you want to move away from Chicago,
yeah,
you walk in and you see what is going to be happening in the next couple months. So it's kind of like a light at the end of the tunnel.
Sure. I mean, do you guys grow those in a greenhouse in Chicago, or they get shipped in?
Correct. Yeah, we actually get them as small plants or plugs, if you will, and we grow them on at either Garfield or Lincoln facilities.
Nice.
And then we display them. And so it starts and ends with Garfield and Lincoln.
So, Jason, you're the flower geek? Is that safe to call you that?
I think that's the perfect way to refer to it.
And I say that with all positivity, you know, of course, you know, because I'm a design geek. I love everything design.
It's a compliment.
Yeah, it is. It is a compliment. What made you get into flowers?
It all started with understanding what I wanted to work with. There's an aesthetic art part of it. There's a scientific element. And I'm always working with my hands, and so all those aspects kind of blended
into... You like to get dirty and play with mud and stuff, too.
Yeah, I don't wear gloves or anything.
Yeah. Why should you? Mm. That's the fun part of it. And how about you, Matt? How did you get into this?
I started working at a garden center when I was in high school. And I took to plants, fell in love with them. And a position opened up at the conservatory in 2000. And I've been there ever since and love it.
Is that like the Hall of Fame for like anybody wanting to be in the flower business?
Yes.
Yeah, it is, right?
Absolutely. It's...
And you're Mick Jagger, basically.
I'm thinking more of a Bono kind of, you know, more international, really.
Yeah, for sure.
But the conservatories are just, it's, if you've never been there, it's hard to explain what the sensation is like. And for people that have been there and they come back, the one thing that you hear over and over again is the smell. Like, they remember the smells. It's that olfactory memory.
I'm getting them now. As you're talking right now, it's literally hitting me. My eyes are watering a little bit, not because I'm emotional from earlier, but yeah, I am kind of. And these are helping with my allergies. They're doing great.
Terrific.
Yeah, I mean, so to explain to me what I'm looking at here.
So we've got some daffodils, some calcellarias, which is the pocketbook plant, some geraniums, some freesia. And
did you say the pocketbook plant?
Yeah, so take a look at that one. little up closer, it looks like a little pocketbook.
Or almost like a coin purse.
I thought it was, yeah, I was going to say, yeah. I thought you guys were referring to almost like the, remember Paris Hilton used to put the chihuahua in her purse as almost like a plant that would go in your
purse. We have really tiny cats that fit in there.
Yeah. I love that. These are cool. I
mean, yeah, they're pretty sweet.
Are they, like, can I pop one? I'm go really tempted. That'd be like killing a plant, though, wouldn't it?
There's plenty more where that came from. All for you.
You're not killing the plant; it's just a flower. But
are you guys getting emotional?
It's not going to do. It's not going to do like a snapdragon effect. If that's
that's what I was looking for, a pop, because they look. You're right; they do look like little purses. Actually, really stylish looking ones. I mean, you can watch this live online right now if you go to wgnradio.com/watch, and you can see all these beautiful colors we have in the studio right now. I want one of these. Now, can these, like, you can get this at any garden center, or this is a specialty plant?
No, you should be able to find them at a decent, garden retailer. And the thing with plants, too, that people need to remember is they're a lot easier than people make them out to be.
I disagree. I'm sorry. I have no green thumb, and all my plants end up dying. Like, I'll get new plants coming in, and maybe I should water them. You think that would help?
Water goes a long way.
Yeah. Yes.
Water helps.
Yeah.
Light.
Light.
Do you keep them in closets?
Are these indoor or outdoor?
Those would be, in our zone, they would be an indoor plant until the summertime. You could have them outside.
These would be outside, yeah. I do good with indoor plants. I don't kill too many of those. It's the outdoor ones that seem to catch me.
Well, that plant to your left there, the Swedish ivy, is a pretty decent indoor plant, actually.
Hardy, right? It'll take some abuse, so to say, and keep going, right?
Oh, yeah, like...
Or neglect.
Human hardy, yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can take some filtered light, and it grows however you want it to. It's really easily managed through pruning or pinching.
We were discussing the interesting odor it emits.
Yeah.
Right, Matt? What were we saying it smelled like?
It reminds me of the bubble bath that my grandmother used to use. I can't remember the name of the stuff.
And I think our grandmother shopped at the same place because it kind of smells the same to me. What is the name of this again?
That is Swedish ivy or plectranthus.
Yeah.
And with that plectranthus, it's, like Jason said, easy to maintain. But if you don't maintain it, you'll come home and your bed will be engulfed.
Really?
It grows like the Dickens.
So if you're lonely, it's a good plant to have.
Sure.
That's what you're talking about.
Wear it like a scarf.
It just hit me what it smells like. Irish Springs soap.
Irish Spring. There you go.
Yep. You guys agree? Mm-hmm.
I've never personally used it, but I'll trust your opinion.
Yes. It's not
Jason
bad.
Jason doesn't use any soap.
No soap. Just rubs himself with plants that smell good.
Essentially.
You don't. Right. If you work at a conservatory, why would you need to shower? You smell like plants all the time. Lots of stuff going on in the conservatories, both at Garfield and Lincoln Park. Matt, why don't you kind of roll off what we got going on and what the folks listening can go check out?
Absolutely. So I'm actually going to have Jason talk about Lincoln first.
Sure.
And talk about the art installation that is coinciding with all the spring flowers over at the Lincoln Park.
And what is that, the Hostilium? Is that what that's called?
Correct, yeah, yeah. The artist is Michael Thompson, and he built several installations that kind of reflect springtime through kites that'll be suspended midair.
Real kites?
No, structural, with bamboo and other materials. But it's supposed to give the viewer the feeling that you're maybe even outside of the glass.
Oh, cool.
Giving you the impression that it's, spring well before actual spring arrives.
Is it a big installation? I mean, did it take long to put up?
I'm not sure how long it took, but there's at least a half a dozen different installations in different spots of the garden, either suspended or amongst the flowers.
The installation took about 2 weeks, and the beautiful thing about his pieces is the color and the patina. It looks like they kind of came with the place.
Oh, nice.
He did a really nice job with making it just kind of, it looks like it should be there.
Commissioned specifically for the conservatory?
He's actually a friend of one of the floriculturists that works at Lincoln. And so Michael, who works for the Chicago Park District, approached him, and he was all down for trying to add something to the show, and we're extremely grateful for his installation.
Yeah, a lot of the kites, are inspired from Chinese themes, which includes a lot of our plant material, azaleas in particular, these broadleaf evergreens that kind of start the show. They're the first to bloom, so to speak, and that kicks us off for the first half of our show.
Do you guys have fans? Like, is there fans for this world? Like, what I mean by that is there people lining up at the beginning of the season to get in there and see the first blooms and...
We have a pretty good return crowd, and if you ever if you've never been there and you're like, man, what is this place? And I want to know more about it. Hit Instagram and hit Yelp and see what people say about the place. I was telling Jason the other day, it's amazing to go on there and read what people say about the place that you work and love and put all this hard work into, and people just adore it.
What are some of the most unique things you've read, or one that really hits you and go, wow, like that's really cool that I'm part of this or I made this happen?
I read a lot. This must be the greatest place to work, and it is. We both love our jobs.
I get asked that all the time, yeah. And I sincerely say it's the best job I could ask to have. It really is.
Well, therapeutically speaking, I mean, you got to be at peace most of the day. I mean, it's such a – and I know it's work. I mean, don't get me wrong.
The great thing is the conservatories, I mean, if you look at them and the amount of plant material, there's a lot. There's a lot going on. The places are big. It takes a lot of maintenance. But our staff is relatively small. We're a tight-knit group, and it's – We all spend more time together than we do with, you know, most of our families, and it's a great team. Everybody gets along, and it's that also helps the environment. And everybody just, you know, no matter what's going on, it's just what do we need to get done? Everybody throws in a hand. It's just fantastic. And the spring show at Garfield, spring training to honor the championship Chicago Cubs. We had great help from not only, you know, several of our trades, our bricklayers, electricians, and carpenters. Our sign shop made these awesome replicas of the scoreboard and the marquee. We've got a real brick wall. It's got the yellow 400 with ivy growing on it, so you can get your picture taken in front of that if you can't get on the field at Wrigley.
Real ivy growing up it?
Real ivy, yes.
How did you get that to work?
We harvested our own ivy, and we attached it to the surface of the brick wall, and during that time, it was dormant, so it was just several vining sticks, and then they eventually created leaves, and you saw this growth happening.
How quickly does that growth happen?
It took about maybe 2-3 weeks to break.
Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah, the houses, we're controlling the climate. We manage our temperatures, humidity, ventilation, and so we're able to jumpstart spring, so to speak.
Got it.
Yeah.
I love it. You guys are like mad scientists.
Yeah, we're a little kooky over there. You know, but that's the fun of it, is trying new things and trying to present plants and art and just an environment in a different way, so you get people thinking about it differently. You talk about people lining up. One thing that is a huge line generator is the Garfield Park Conservatory has a nonprofit in-house, the Garfield Park Conservatory Alliance, that does all of our family programming, and they do, you know, great work with kids and families. But they have an event coming up. It's Thursday, May 18th, Beer Under Glass.
Or Bug.
Bug. And this is going to be the 7th or 8th iteration. Over 100 craft brewers take over the grounds and in the conservatory. So
it's got to be huge.
It's a lot awesome. Of fun. It's a blast. So you buy your ticket, you get a glass, and you go from station to station, and you try these different beers and, you know, sample some food from the food trucks that we, you know, park back on the property, and all this is happening within this environment that just, you know, can't be beat.
Indoors and outdoors.
Yeah. So
do you have anybody monitoring, anybody plucking stuff off of after a couple beers, just kind of meandering? Oh, you're shaking your head, yes. Yeah.
There's thankfully, you know, people, I think they understand the space and the work that goes into it and the beauty, and you know, one flower plucked by you is one less that everybody else gets to see. So I think, you know, people kind of...
You just broke my heart with that. You know, that should be on a t-shirt right there.
Yeah, I think so.
It's catchy.
It is catchy. And sell it at the conservatory to raise money.
That's the Felix number 9 rule right there. but the spring shows both run through Mother's Day, which is May 14th. Spring training at Garfield, and have not had a Bill Murray sighting there, but hopefully that does happen because huge Cubs fan. And Spring Rising at the Lincoln Park Conservatory. And along with the great programming that the Alliance does and the shows at the conservatory, the Park District has just great summer programming. And all of the online schedule is now available. And online registration starts April 24th and 25th at 9 a.m. So be ready. And you can do it in person on the 29th and May 1st. Nature Camp at Maggie Daly, and fishing at Northerly Island, and spending some time under the night skies at Northerly, and they take the kids up to Illinois State Beach Park, family camping on the 606. I mean, all sorts of great
stuff. Sounds nice. We got some folks texting in, questioned how long is the spring training going to be there, and is there ample parking?
That is the that's the one sweet thing about Garfield. We have a Green Line stop that drops you steps from the front door, but we also have a huge visitor parking lot. Parking is free. Admission is free. We just asked for a...
free is a good thing. And a rare thing these days.
It
so
is.
So we thank you for
We asked for a little donation, if you don't mind, because it helps, you know, our shows go. But, yeah, the two spring shows, both through Mother's Day. Be sure to get out there and see it. And on a bright, sunny day, that is the time to see it. And it's... You walk into the room, and you're literally just engulfed in this fragrance and just... blinded by the colors. It's awesome.
I can smell it. Just with the five or six flowers you brought in, it smells fantastic already in here.
That's great.
You know, one last question for you guys. Have flower selfies become real popular? Are you seeing this trend?
Oh, my gosh, yes. Oh, yes. Sometimes we'll catch the some of the patrons will maybe sneak their way into a garden bed
I was
to
thinking
get the
about
perfect
this.
Picture. You know, it's...
Hop on Instagram. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's hilarious, though.
Hashtag flower selfie. I like it.
There you go.
So you guys need to start these things. We can start a think tank here for you guys.
Oh, we've got a few at Garfield.
Oh, that's good.
You just, you don't want to go in them, though. You'll never get out.
Right. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We appreciate it. And what's the website that has all this information for people to see?
So people can go to chicagoparkdistrict.com for all the park programs. And for conservatory-specific events at Garfield, go to garfieldconservatory.org. And be sure to... You know, find us on Facebook and Instagram, read some Yelp reviews. You'll get enthusiastic about coming out to visit and, you know, make the trip, take some time and enjoy it.
Awesome. And we got a video up on Twitter and Facebook if you guys want to go check it out at WGNradio.com/Frank Fontana. And by the way, I did not rip this off. It fell off. There's a pedal that
sure
I'm keeping.
Memento right there.
I know nothing.
The show that puts the improv in home improvement. It's Frank Fontana on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the show, folks. Switching gears here, moving from plants to amazing food and the secret to phenomenal restaurants in the Chicagoland area. I'm being joined by two restaurateurs and an icon in the business, Mr. Howard Davis and Julia Zhu, who's now the owner of Bar Roma in Andersonville. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure. First of all, congrats on Bar Roma. It's just been killing it. The food, the atmosphere, the buzz around town. Julia, you're like a celebrity in the restaurant business off the bat. I mean, you guys are doing something right over there.
I guess we have a good team, and especially I feel very fortunately have you on team for designing the whole the restaurant. Everybody feels very rustic and with class. Rustic looking with a classic feeling.
Yes.
And people feel atmosphere and ambience. It's so comfortable. Feel like go to a friend's home.
That's exactly what you want to get out of a design like that. And out of, you know, the food meshed with the design, meshed with the people. I was reading some reviews earlier today about Bar Roma. And if you guys haven't been there, it's off Clark Street on Anderson. What's the exact address, Julia?
5101 North Clark Street. It's across the street is Carmen Street.
5101 North Clark Street. You'll see the sign. It's a corner sign, big. Do we still have the meatball? Do we go with the round?
Yeah, we have the round.
The round the meatball. Round the inspiration meatball. For the entire design, by the way, was a meatball, right, Howard?
It was. Well, we got the inspiration for the restaurant from the meatball shop in New York, and we wanted to offer Italian food beyond the meatballs, so we focused on food from Rome, Italy, and that's where we came up with the name Bar Roma.
Why Italian? We have Howard Davis and Julia Zhu. Howard's Jewish and Julia's from China, right?
I'm Chinese.
Why Italian? What made you guys come together and say, we want to do this?
Well, besides you being the designer.
Right,
you
I'm Italian, right. I'll throw that into the mix. But, you know, is it a passion for you in terms of your food? Because I remember early on when we first met about the restaurant, and this is kind of also, you know, dovetailing into how a restaurant really become successful. It's one of the hardest businesses to really make work. You've been involved with many successful restaurants, so you have some Midas touch that we don't know about.
Well, I started in the restaurant business in 1991. I'm a corporate lawyer by day, and got involved in the restaurant business with my partner Jerry Kleiner, an interior designer. We opened Vivo on West Randolph Street when no one was over there. No one wanted to go over
there. Warehouses.
It was a warehouse district. It was the funky warehouse district with the active produce market over there. And when we first opened Vivo in 1991, which was a huge success, people would come by and say, "Ooh, why'd you open up over here? You're out in the middle of nowhere." Now you look at it, and it's so
booming.
Built
you
up.
Guys
it's,
had vision.
We did. We did. And then after Vivo, we opened Marché and Red Light. And then we went to the South Loop and opened up Giocco Restaurant, which is still open.
Yeah.
1312 South Wabash.
Well, Marché had a good run. Red Light had a huge run. These are restaurants that are iconic in that district. In Chicago, too.
Yeah. But in 2008, when the economy crashed, what we found was that the Italian restaurants survived the economic crash much, much better than the French, American, and Asian ones.
Interesting.
So being in the business for this many years, what we've found is that Chicago consumer really favors Italian over all other food, and that's what we wanted to offer. But there's so many great Italian restaurants in Chicago.
There really is. Big competition.
Big competition. We wanted to offer something special, and that's why we focused on the food from Rome, Italy. We got Chef Fred Ramos, who is our chef at Giocco and cooked at many, many great Italian restaurants.
Yeah, and he's primo, man. He's a phenomenal chef.
He's doing a great job, and we went to New York and saw many excellent Roman Italian restaurants. And
you call that research, right?
We do.
Yeah, we did research. Yeah.
Every other week, I'd be like getting texts from someplace in the country like, "Oh, look at this dish, Frank. Look at this interior." It was great. Julie, how about you? What attracted you to want to do?
For me, and I have been as a banker for over 18 years, about to retire. I always told Howard, I said, if I retire, I'd like to have my own restaurant. Yeah. I had invested.
You know, that's not officially not retiring, right?
It's
making
I worked
a lateral
ever harder
move.
than before. Yes, but I was an investor about 18 years ago for a sushi place called Oishi Sushi, and we sold out 6 years ago. So I told how it's my dream when I retire, I like to have a neighborhood restaurant. So can I have friends over, have a nice food and a glass of wine. That's always in my retirement kind of dream. So Howard said, okay, if we open, it has to be, you know, it's an Italian restaurant, be sustainable, it's recession proof. So, and from Chinese mind, we always believe that Marco Polo imported spaghettis from China in 17th century. So I think that would durable if we just Chinese open an Italian restaurant. It's not a bad cool. idea.
I love that story. Now, can we validate that? Did Marco Polo really bring it from China over?
Yeah, you can do the
is
research.
Is that in the history
yeah,
books, Howard?
Yeah. We'll have to check that.
I'm deferring to you, the attorney here on this.
I think there is evidence.
There's evidence, yes.
And even if there wasn't, you know, I have to agree with Julia.
Of course you do. Nonetheless, I love the story. I think it's great. So how is retirement treating you?
I feel it's physically challenging, but it's rewarding too, because with the success, you know, we had opened that restaurant for about a little over for 3 months. And I was very surprised, amazed that, you know, when we 3 days after our opening, our place is packed. I feel very fortunately have all the support from the neighborhood people.
Yes.
Say, especially, you know, during the, you know, last 3 months, we have repeating customer over 30%.
Wow.
So which is good. The portion of repeating, they come once or twice a week.
That's great retention.
Yeah.
Especially for the restaurant business. Julie, I got to tell you, I read a review recently. I think it was on Yelp. And one of the comments were specifically about you. And it was a good one. I haven't read anything negative. It was that the fact that the people who come there from the neighborhood and throughout Chicagoland really feel the warmth and the care that comes from the owner. And they mentioned Julia specifically, that she's there addressing every single concern, coming up to every table, talking to people, and making sure that their experience is one to be remembered. So kudos to you for.
Thank you. Yeah, it's always my my thoughts when I'm even training our staff. I said the food comes in the kitchen. That's just the 50% half of the success. The other half, it's really dependent on our team in the front house, how to deliver exceptional experience, mm-hmm. and to connect with our diners. That's I. I believe it's a very crucial point for us. So it's for me, and I want to create a place. It's like a homely. I want a friend, a people comes in just like going to a friend's home for dinner. That's how I envision. So I enjoy being there and greeting the people and just making them too easy and friendly, just build up a relationship, just like, you know, just...
Let them know you care.
Do it. Yeah, yeah, right. Then I make them feel like warm when they come here, just feel relaxed and just, you know, whatever they want to say, whatever they want to eat, order, then I am their friend. And
it's working, whatever you're doing. It's working, for sure.
So that's one of my... I would think it's my treat because when I opened the... Japanese restaurant 18 years ago, I was just only front person. I was 3 days in the restaurant. I remember every day, every time I was there, that day, all people come just want to see me and chat with me. I think that's important.
Very important.
Especially with a neighborhood restaurant. Sure. You know, it's a small spot. People like to see the owners there care for their customers.
Yep. Howard, speaking of the neighborhood, tell us about Andersonville and why you chose Andersonville as the first spot for Bar Roma.
Well, we were looking around. You know, I have Gioco Restaurant in the South Loop, so we wanted to go north. And we were looking all around the north side, and we found Andersonville, which is a unbelievably fantastic community. There's some really terrific neighborhoods and communities in Chicago. This Andersonville is very special. It's a very strong-knit community. They stick together. And we opened the restaurant. Even the business owners came by and welcomed us to the neighborhood. Very sweet group of people, very devoted to community matters, cultural matters.
Was there any resistance initially? I mean, going into such a tight-knit community, you had to have some concern that you may not, you know, be accepted.
I can tell you a story. That was last August. We were still during the construction. Then I got an invite to a WFCW Block Club. The people living around it, they want me to speak to the club member, do a presentation. I attended. I was kind of nervous. I don't know what it kind of feels about in the neighborhood restaurant because Chamber of Commerce kind of mentioned the canteen in 1910 was there at the beginning. Then when we looked at the space, they were very successful. Then 5 months later, when we closed our deal, they closed down the business.
They closed their
doors.
Yeah.
So I just didn't know. I when I walk in the room, I feel the resistance. People question me, is your restaurant going to be like a cantina 10?
Sure.
Is going to be fancy or expensive? That's the main point. Is going to be expensive. Then we kind of, so I kind of made example. I said, okay, how you measured expense? Okay, expensive. So say cantina 10, they have something on the menu, $6, but only have 2 bites. Then we sell meatball. It's big, good size meatball.
I think we have a couple of meatballs. Dave's opening right now, actually.
Yeah, it's how, look at the size.
Oh, gosh.
I said, if it costs you $9, it's more than $6, but you compare 2 tablespoon bites and compare with 3 meatballs, you tell me who provide the values. So that's what I was kind of people... Was very so focused on pricing.
Right, and they just want to make sure another joint wasn't coming in to rip them off
or
consume space in their neighborhood that's just going to be, you know, a downer to the neighborhood.
Well, we've gotten great response about the value of our menu, and we made an effort to do that. But, you know, talking about the what makes a place successful, you know, there's a famous story about James Beard, the first celebrity chef.
It's James Beard this week, East, right?
It is James Beard week, and we are offering a special chef's dish, jumbo lump crab meat ravioli with lemon herb butter sauce, which is based on a James Beard recipe.
Is that what is here? I mean, you brought some samples from Bar Roma here. By the way, the meatball that I'm tasting right now, what is this? It's insanity. It's so good.
It's a beef meatball. It's our biggest seller.
But there's it's almost like chunks of not just the, you know, the meat that's ground. There's actually pieces of, it's almost like a I don't know, like a beef.
Yeah, we ground
like a pulled beef in there.
We ground our beef, yeah, and I think they also use beef cheek, which is a very tender part of the animal that they add in there. But so James Beard, you know, created some of the greatest restaurants and could eat anywhere in the world. They asked him one time, "What's your favorite restaurant?" He said, "The place where they know me." Hmm. And that's what Julia offers to the people. She's there all the time. They know her, the community people, the neighborhood.
That's why Howard makes sure that I'll be every minute on the floor.
But basically, to make a successful place, you need a good location, which we have in Andersonville. You need a good concept, which the Italian food people like, and then a good management team, which we have. And Frank, you were part of it. And like I said, I was telling you earlier, people walk in, they look at the design, they really like the design. There's elements that you created there, like you took the old wooden wine boxes and crates and tore them apart, put it on part of the ceiling.
Yeah, we had like a little inset into the ceiling where we took these vintage wine boxes and tacked them in all the random places. Some beautiful lighting hung there. I mean, to me, and I've designed many places, this is one of my favorites. It's not the biggest I've ever designed, the most elaborate, but I said to you guys this from the beginning when I met both Howard and Julia. I said, there's just something about this team. There's just something about this space and the concept and the feeling that was happening. You could sense the undertow of good vibes and buzz happening as we were putting this together, even though there were some hiccups here and there.
Yeah.
Like in every construction project, it just felt right. And then when the design finally came together, and you had a lot of doubts, Howard. I mean, at every turn, let's be real.
Fighting with you.
There's only a couple hundred thousand people listening. I mean, it's okay to have, you know.
I'm the lawyer. I'm paid to be the doubter. But
absolutely. And you know what? That doubt sometimes pushes us in a direction to create some decisions that ultimately come to fruition in a great way when everybody's ideas actually come together. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's the genesis and why that space is so popular right now. Bar Rome is just killing it. I mean,
you kept the exposed brick. You unearthed the original tile floor from
amazing.
The early 1900s.
Yeah,
we had some major.
And people love those elements.
Yeah, that's a gold mine, though. I mean, that's something that we just kind of found. Yeah. You know, like we were lucky to find the original floors underneath there.
Yeah.
I hope everyone at least goes in there, checks it out for the visual, has a cocktail, and you guys have some great, you know, house cocktails.
We
as
have
well.
Craft cocktails done by Devin, our mixologist, and they're terrific people. Like them, and they have a little bit of an Italian bent to them. We're open for dinner every night, 7 nights a week, and we're open for brunch Saturday and Sunday. And the brunch has typical brunch items on the menu, but also some Italian focused brunch items like frittata.
And you guys have a website, and you're on social media, is correct, right?
Correct.
What's the website?
Baroma Chicago.com.
And you can find them on Instagram, Facebook. If you just punch in Baroma Chicago, you'll find them on there. They post all their specials and weeklies. I tend to repost and like all that stuff too. So you can always hop on my social media at Frank Fontana. Guys, thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate this. And we got some samplings of food we're going to be enjoying for the rest of the show here. We got to catch up and I got to have a dinner with you guys over there.
Yeah.
Thank you for
having us.
Absolutely. Baroma, guys, it's 5101 North Clark Street in Andersonville.
It's Frank Fontana on 720 WGN.
Hey there, welcome back to the show. Now we're getting our tanks filled over here, at least our bellies. Just had a great conversation with the folks from Baroma, Howard Davis and Julie Zhu. Brought some samples of their amazing meatballs. They're known for their meatball specialties and all sorts of northern Italian dishes. Great area in Andersonville to go check out. Speaking of great areas, over on Devon, over in Westridge, there's work underway for the final two stages of a $15 million streetscape project that spans 20 blocks of Westridge. I don't know if you read about this. It was in the Tribune under DNA info. They are literally creating these works of art in the middle of intersections. And there's some pictures up there. I don't know, Dave, can we post some pictures on WGN Radio after you're done eating there?
This is amazing.
What are you eating over there?
I was just having the meatball.
The meatballs are so good.
And then What was this? A tortellini?
Oh, my God. A tortellini, yes.
Tortellini, yeah.
And there, I think there's spinach and something cheese in there.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, we digress. So the work's already started, and they're going to be going between Sacramento and California and Rockwell to Western. And you could see all sorts of different designs inspired. It looks like a lot of Indian-inspired design. I think this is cool, man. I love the city moving in this direction. They're going to do all sorts of fun stuff like painted intersections, new curbs, gutters, improved lighting, benches, bike racks, garbage cans, planters. You know, it's great to see our city growing and getting stylish at the same time. They really want to make a unique experience over on Devon Avenue. I love the shopping over there. I love the restaurants. It's a really cool part of town.
You know, we extended an invitation for the mayor, hopefully.
Mayor Rahm?
Mayor Emanuel, yeah. And hopefully he could join us one day to talk about everything. Not only that, because Millennium Park is one of the Midwest attractions for tourists. There's a lot of good things and a lot of artsy spots in the Chicagoland area.
Definitely. We'll extend an invitation. We'd love to have Mayor Emanuel join us here on a Sunday afternoon. We'll give him some Bar-Roma food, lure him in with some tequila.
We'll
keep them happy. I just saw this other article come across my desk here. The worst colors to paint your home, according to research. And this is put out by El Decor. And so here's, for 2017, some of the shades you should not paint on your walls. And if you do, and you have, you should probably get some new paint and get at it. So the first one they're saying is the world's ugliest color. And this is deemed by Australian researchers. It's a greenish brown, called opaque couche. Never heard of it, but if you have a greenish brown color to your walls, Australia is saying it's the world's ugliest color. So you might want to paint over that if you don't like it. Good thing about paint is you can paint over it. They also say the color peach fuzz. Even though it was popular in the 60s, today this color quickly dates a house. And when it, I mean, I don't know too many people. I see a lot of houses. I mean, this is what I do. I haven't seen peach fuzz in too many homes other than, like, you know, if I go to, like, anybody over 70, sometimes I'm seeing peach fuzz. And that sounds terrible. Peach fuzz color.
But you have to be careful now, because maybe if it's that old, maybe it has some lead. So you got to be careful.
This is true. So they say it's uplifting in small ways, like in home accessories, but it is mood crushing when it covers too big of a surface. So stay away from the peach fuzz. I'm just leaving it at that. Orange popsicle. That's another color they say that evokes major wow factor, but not in a good way. It's overwhelming for walls and is even known to stimulate the appetite. So if you're looking to lose weight, do not paint your walls orange popsicle.
Because it inspires you to eat. It motivates you to eat. Because, you know, some restaurants have a lot of yellow and at least Mexican
and orange
restaurants.
Too.
Yeah, red, orange. And
but the orange popsicle is like a mix between orange and yellow.
Oh, okay.
So you'd get this little tinge of yellow in the orange. But yeah, I guess, you know, there's science to color. I mean, I'm writing in my book, I have a whole chapter dedicated to the science of color and how it impacts people emotionally, physically, mentally. So there's definitely some science behind this stuff.
And it creates a mood, because you notice how banks, they have blue, because
yep.
It's for more cool, business, more
relaxing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then like places like McDonald's is what? Vibrant yellow and vibrant red. Why? Because they want to create a sense of urgency and get you in and out. So they want you to come in, eat quick, spend your money quick, get out so that it can turn it over and keep doing it again and again and again. So that's the and speaking of blazing yellow, that's one of the colors listed here on our El Decor worst colors of 2017. Buttery yellows are cheery but go too bright, and this happy color takes on an aggressive tone that make people feel anxious or distressed. It's also overpowering, which says it kind of translates into ugly in their opinion. I'm not a fan of bright, vibrant yellows. I think it could be definitely...
not even for spring?
Yeah, in flowers, yes. Great. Oh, okay. Outdoors, you know, even as an accent color, bright, you know, blazing yellow is rough. And it's hard to paint over, too. It's got a lot of, like, yellow iodine in it. And so, like, you have to do a couple coats of primer.
Your eyesight.
Yeah, you could hurt your eyesight. You could poke your eyes out with that color right there. Let's see here. We got poppy red. Bright red colors tend to be anger-inducing, which is basically the opposite of how you want to feel at home, right? You don't want to be angry sitting at home watching television. especially if you're watching like a Bears game, you're already going to be angry. If it's behind a red wall or in front of a red wall, you're going to be even more angry. They note that the shade also combined with a little pink and 80s neon. So, you know, these are real. The hues and color are so important. This is what they're talking about, is if it has a little bit of pink in the red, it's going to be this poppy red. So they say stay far away from it. And you can find this at ldecor.com, Design Decorate is what it's called. Parfait Pink is the last one here. Dusty colors like this muted shade of pastel pink sucks the brightness out of a room. Since bright colors elevate your mood, lackluster ones tend to do the opposite. So Parfait Pink, which would be, I'm thinking it's like a Pepto-Bismol color.
Oh my God.
Pink.
Yeah.
Is what they're thinking is the parfait pink, the muted pink. You know, it has its applications. I'm not going to totally hate on that one.
Especially in a children's room?
In a children's room, a young girl's room. You know, you could bring these in accents, any one of these colors. And by the way, folks, this is a printed article. You know, if any one of these colors actually make you feel good, God bless you. Paint them all over the house. As long as you feel good. Right, Dave?
Even peach fuzz.
Even peach fuzz. Oh, boy. Lastly here, my wife constantly talks about moving into a smaller home. Like, she wants to do tiny house.
She wants to clean less than...
She wants to take me and our two kids and just go off the grid somewhere into a tiny house. And I think she's crazy. I love her to death, but I think she's... I could never do it. But apparently, you know, a lot of people are, and there's shows about it. And here's 12 reasons why you'd be happier in a smaller home. One, it's easier to maintain. So this is her. Yeah. This is her attempt at convincing me. Okay, I can agree with that. Less time spent cleaning. True.
Less time to dust. Less time to mop. Less time to everything.
Less expensive. Okay, I can understand.
You buy
that.
Less liquids to clean.
Right. Less debt and less risk overall because your overhead is lower. All right. Not feeling convinced yet. Mentally freeing. I disagree wholeheartedly. How is that? How is reducing your square footage by thousands to 600, let's say, square feet maximum? How is that mentally free? That's like a prison cell.
Maybe cost-wise. You're going to be mentally, it's not going to stress you out. Cause...
Well, what they say here is that it's all about the less possessions. The more we own, the more we own. The more they own us. The more stuff we own, the more mental energy is held hostage by them. And I can understand that. But I think what you trade off in space would make you feel more contained than freed. This number six is less environmental impact. Agreed. Seven, you'd have more time because you're not spending it on the house. Eight, encourages family bonding. I can agree with that. Forces you to remove baggage. I like that. Less temptation to accumulate. Agreed. Less decorating. Not a fan of that because I'm a decorator. Wider market to sell. So those are the 12 things that were supposed to convince me into moving into a smaller house. And honey, I do love you, but we're staying where we're at.
Uh-oh.
Sorry. I love you. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break, do some news, and when we come back, we're going to be sampling some tequila.
Tequila, yes. You're going to speak Spanish, Frank.
Sí.
The Frank Fontana Show. It's not just home improvement, it's life improvement.
Oh, yeah. Especially when it comes to improving your life with un poquito de tequila, which unfortunately we have everything here but that.
They're limiting us, Frank.
I know. I think they did it on purpose, Dave. We're being joined in studio by the owner of, I'm going to say this problem, I'm going to try really hard here, Le Tequilaria. La Tequilaria. David Suarez is the owner, and Elliot Acosta is the head mixologist, correct?
Correct.
From the new joint that's opening up in Melrose Park, when?
It's going to be opening the 27th and 28th is going to be the grand opening. And after that, we're going to be open from Tuesday to Sunday from 2 p.m. to 2 a.m. We 2 are ready to go. Ooh, it's going to be Melrose go-to spot from now on.
Yeah, now I'm a huge, anybody who listens to the show knows I'm a huge tequila guy. Like, I'm not just to get, you know, like, oh, let's do shots of tequila. Right. I enjoy sipping a good tequila just like somebody enjoys sipping a good bourbon or scotch. And this is kind of the genesis of the restaurant, right? You're looking for people who really appreciate the culture of tequila.
Correct. Tequila is the closest spirit to wine that there is. It's a 7-year process just to grow the plant. So we want people to appreciate it, drink it the correct way in a nice champagne flute, and really get all the flavors from the plant that...
In a champagne flute. Interesting.
Yeah, that's the way that we drink it in Mexico.
Really?
Yeah.
This
absolutely
is new to me.
Yeah.
Mine, I like mine on the rocks with a little bit of lime, you know. But I will certainly. And so warm, or do you chill it?
Warm, usually just room temperature, but people can have it chilled as well, but served up and just to be sipped on.
Ooh, I like this. Are you guys going to do like you know, you go to a craft beer house and they'll sample their collection? Are you going to be doing samplings?
Absolutely. We're going to be doing flights, flights of tequila and mezcal. There's going to be a variety of them. Silver, reposado, añejos, extra añejos. The thing about tequila is that there is really no right or wrong. It's just depending on how you like your tequila. Some people like it more on the whiskey side, a little darker, softer, tones of vanilla. And then you get the, you know, like me, I really like the Jovens, the Blancos, a little bit more acidic, more in your face agave.
Do you feel like the younger generation tequila drinkers gravitate towards the Blancos more than the darker?
To be honest with you, right now mezcal is on the rise. I think that it has to do with preference, and it always links back to your first experience with tequila. I mean, some people have it when they're on a party mode.
Do you really want to go there?
But it really does matter with where you have it for the first time. We're very excited about this.
So mezcal versus tequila. Let's talk about the difference.
So to be a tequila from Jalisco, it's a blue agave. So agave, there's 100 different varieties of plant. Blue agave is tequila. The other 100 and so different variations of it can be made into mezcal. So mezcal is a lot more diverse in the flavors that you can get out of it. So you can.
But it is a form of tequila.
It is, yeah. Tequila is mezcal. But tequila Jalisco is where you make tequila. So they named it after the town that it was made in. But people would normally just say, go get mezcal from tequila. So it got the name tequila.
And it's
tequila.
Got a smokier taste to it,
Yeah. So I think, Elliot, you were telling me they go underground, they put a fire on top of it, and that smoke cooks the agave plant, and it just gets that real smokiness. Whereas in tequila, we're putting them in big ovens with no smoke, so it's a different type of flavor.
I wish you guys would have brought me in on the R&D team for this restaurant. I'd love to have been part of the research and development of the of your menu and your tequila, you know, offering.
Sure.
Your family makes their own tequila, correct?
We do. Yes. So we started Adoro Tequila about 2 years ago, and my dad's born in Jalisco, so he was very adamant about having a brand owned by a Mexican person, because most of these brands have been sold off to different organizations and companies. So we're excited. We've had it for 2 years. You can find them at Binny's, and it's Adoro. We have Blanco, Reposado, Añejo, and we're waiting for our extra Añejo in about a year to be ready.
All right, so you guys are both experts. All right, let's talk frankly here. Patron, it's really popular, but I hear from experts that it's not as everything it's cracked up to be. What is your expert opinion on that?
I think Patron, they make it in big batches. So the bigger in batches you go, the least amount of attention it's going to get per bottle or per barrel. I think preferably I like the small batches because they are, you know, very precise in how many of the ounces do they pour and what kind of flavor do all those have. They sometimes handpick the agave plants as well. Once you go, you know, into the really, really big companies, they just grab all the agave plants that they can and they make big batches. So I think
does that go for like Jose Cuervo and like the Tres Generaciones and things like that?
You know, but Jose Cuervo has been around for 270 years. So they have, you know, they do it the old school way, whereas Patron, something within the last 15 years. And so I'm like Elliot. I like the older school brands, Herradura, Tres Generaciones, Sauza, one of the oldest brands. So I like all tequilas, but those are the older school ones are the ones that I really
Have you tried Avión?
I have.
What do you think?
Similar to Patron.
Yeah.
It's one of those, you know, it came out on a TV show and then people started buying it. But, you know, it's tequila. It's 100% blue agave. It's tasty.
Yeah.
I gravitate more towards the old school.
So when we talk about 100% pure agave, it takes me back to my first, you talked about your first tequila experience. Mine was straight up Jose Cuervo out of a well.
Yeah.
Which was detrimental to my future at that time.
Sure. You know, it's 51% agave, 49% added sugars and coloring. And
so that's what made that yellowy.
Correct. Yeah. And that's what made you feel not so well the next day as well. So,
well, you know, people, you hear these stories of people getting violent over tequila. And I've never experienced that, but I did like how I got turned on tequila. I used to work in the restaurant nightclub business, you know, in my late teens and early 20s before I started this whole world. Uh-huh. And the owner of the bar we were, you know, working with, I actually ended up becoming a partner with him. His nightly ritual after we, you know, counted all the money was everyone that worked there had to do a shot of tequila. And if you didn't, you didn't get your tip outs and all that kind of stuff. It was kind of an ongoing joke.
Yeah.
But that's how I got turned on tequila, when it was with the crappy stuff.
Right. Yeah. I think we're going to have to implement that, but with 100% Blue Agave tequila.
Agreed.
Yeah.
I think that's a, it should be a night. A, the ritual should be, and B, no one should ever drink that stuff. So what's going to be your well? What's going to be your tequila well then? The Adoro?
So, no, the Adoro is going to be our signature margarita. That's something that we're very, very proud of. Matter of fact, Adoro Tequila is a very, very good tequila. Coming to this opportunity, the owners of Adoro did not want to put this on the well because it's not a well tequila. It is top-notch, small batches. Highly recommend. You guys got to go try it out. But our well is also going to consist of Corralejo, which is also top-notch. Even bars in downtown Chicago are not going to use Corralejo for the fact that it's a little bit more pricier, it's more quality. But we're not afraid to put good things on our cocktails, including our well lineup. We're really going out. We're not taking any shortcuts at this bar. We are very excited for how sophisticated this place is going to be and how much more of the educational part of it is going to be going through the servers. I mean, we're going to be able to have also Apple POS systems where you walk in there and you want to check out some tequilas. We'll give you the picture of the bottles of tequila, the information of how it's
made. Everything
will
be like an iPad or something.
Mm-hmm. Every single thing. So it's going to be – it's more like wine. We're taking another step like wine. Introducing tequila to Melrose Park.
Now, is this going to be a concept that you're going to take across Chicagoland eventually, or is it kind of the pilot program for...
It's the pilot. You know, we've had small gatherings there, and everybody that's been there has kind of been like, okay, well, why don't you put this one out in Chicago or LaGrange or Hinsdale?
I was going to tell you, man. I could see one of these in my backyard.
Yeah, you know, Oak Park. And, you know, so we want to get this one up off the ground and really educate the community about tequila and to be proud, as a Mexican-American like myself, to be proud of tequila. Something from my home country. So I think that'll resonate with people, and getting this one off the ground and then seeing where else to take
Let me
us.
Know, man. Cool. I got a couple good locations right in mind for you, right in downtown LaGrange.
I think you'd
kill it down there.
Oh, thank you. Definitely.
Yeah, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to talk more about La Tequilería. Did I say it wrong? Yeah, don't laugh at me.
No, you're right on.
Close, right? I was close.
Close.
And we're going to switch our focus from tequila to the design and the interior and the styling of it, because I've seen the pictures. Mm-hmm. Haven't been there in person yet, but it looks really great. You're working with a great hometown designer, Mary Beth, mm-hmm. From LaGrange. I'd love to hear how it all came together. La tequilería. I can't say it. La tequilería. See, if you brought me tequila, I could probably say it at that point. You got some great samples of the drinks, but I want to talk, shift focus here a little bit about the interior of the place. Tell me about the styling and the design of the restaurant.
Sure. What we wanted to do is have a kind of like a rustic look, but with some modern touches. So we enlisted the help of Mary Beth, Interiors by Mary Beth out of LaGrange. And she's not only a great designer, but she's also a good friend of my family's. So she's gone to Mexico. We're from Guadalajara. And she's probably gone down with us 15, 20 times. So,
For business or pleasure?
For both. I think it goes business and then it turns into pleasure.
I'm jealous. I'm sorry, Dave. I'm jealous. I wish I was part of the design team.
I know.
It would have been great research. I would have done
fun.
It for free.
Oh, yeah. No, but
like, oh, by the way.
I'm like, you know what? Let's
maybe location number two.
Yeah. So we wanted to do something kind of modern as well. So we have some really cool paintings done by a very cool artist out of Guadalajara. His name is Reyes Trigueros. So he came in about a month ago, stayed for a couple weeks, and just decorated the place and did some really cool...
Vibrant colors in the artwork.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, the chairs and the tables are really, like, we use wood. And we brought a lot of stuff in from Mexico. I actually went to Mexico twice, brought cow hides back. Brought nail heads back because we really wanted to tie it in.
Did you use any Mexican tile?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I loved the Spanish tile. Yeah. It's so the handcrafted, hand-painted look.
Yeah.
Where did you guys use like these elements at, the cowhide and the nail heads?
So we have cowhide underneath one of the lounge spaces that we have. We have a couch, a coffee table, but huge piece of cowhide.
Mostly upholstery?
Yes, correct. But then we did a lot of the chairs with reupholstery. All the backs of the chairs have different kind of real cowhide made out of Guadalajara.
Nice.
Yeah.
And so it brings the Spanish influence and the Mexican influence, but you're capturing what you say is today's voice for the Melrose area, because you know you're in an area that has a lot of competition for restaurants.
Sure.
And your lounge scene, I'm not familiar with the Melrose lounge scene, but what are you looking at in terms of the styles of other places versus yours?
You know, we just try to do something different. You know, there was a lot of sports bars, different restaurants. We want to do more of a lounge space where people can go meet. Yeah. Have a cocktail or two, talk business, and feel comfortable. That's why the couches, the coffee tables, the chairs.
Yeah. What time do you open during the day?
We're going to open at 2 p.m. And then we're going to close at 2 a.m.
Okay. Yeah. And then 2 p.m. To be like kind of happy hour vibe? Or?
Yeah. We're hoping people come in after work, have a cocktail with their friends, you know, their coworkers, relax. And
maybe take the meeting out of the office into
right. The exactly. Restaurant. Exactly.
I like that idea. And so your food menu, what are you thinking for food?
So we're going to do small plates. We want to do ceviches, nachos, quesadillas, stuff that finger foods, because we don't want to take, we want people to go there for the drinks.
Right.
But not have to leave and go somewhere else to eat. So we're definitely going to have, you know, 5 to 8 small plates, shareable plates that can keep people sticking around, having another cocktail.
So no big main courses or anything like that?
No. We want to really stay true to the tequila, the mezcal, and the craft beer. So we want people to really just enjoy and kind of have a, maybe eat their lunch, eat their dinner, or drink their dinner.
Right. Yeah. I love it. Yeah. So in terms of your ambiance and the lighting, what are we looking at, you know, when we come in the place? Give me the visual tour.
All right. Well, it's a lounge, and there's a right in the middle of it, there's going to be some lounge chairs where you can have your coffee. On the walls, you're going to be able to get high top tables where you're going to be able to enjoy these bites that we're having. We're doing maybe like flatbreads and things of that nature. So we want to put these in the middle, shareable plates. Then we have the bar will be taking over. We have over 100 brands of tequila.
What's the front face of the bar look like? What'd you do for design on that?
Oh, man. So she did the kind of like a leather feel on top with mm-hmm. and then bolted in with these nail heads that we brought from Mexico that are all rustic and beat up.
Yeah.
So she did leather along the top. And that same leather plays on the chairs, too, that are at the bar. Got all it. The reupholstery, same coloring, same feel. So, but the back bar is lit up, 100 bottles, like Elliot was saying, 20 mezcales. You know, 2 smaller TVs. We're not really
trying to be sports bar.
No, we're trying to be go. We don't want people to have to leave to go, you know, watch the Cubs win or something. You know.
Yeah, and you mentioned something about having potentially having gaming in there too, right?
Yeah, so we're gonna have 5 of those poker machines in a separate room. They're gonna have a little TV in there too, but really a classy, nice chair, same feel. Yeah. You know, we're gonna class it up a lot so people can go in there and try their luck out as well.
I love that. And I saw in pictures you have some old tequila barrels, too?
Yes. So we
empty or full?
They're empty now, but the goal is within about a year to age our own tequila. So we want to, we have about 15-gallon barrels, get some tequila, label it, put the date on it, and say, you know what, we're going to open this one next Cinco de Mayo, next September 16th for Mexican Independence Day.
Great landmark type
of
things.
Yeah, and I think it'd be fun and you know, you can do a bunch of stuff with aging tequilas. We can switch the barrel to a sherry barrel, to an oak barrel.
Are they similar in like whiskey? Do they smoke those? Do they burn them on the insides or, you know, outsides, whatever? How do they do it to give it an enhanced flavor?
There's a bunch of variations of these. So people burn the inside. Some people use whiskey barrels. Mm-hmm. I know in Mexico, a lot of them get Jack Daniel's barrels.
So they recycle the Jack Daniel's and put them in tequila.
Right, and that's why you get that really heavy bourbon or whiskey flavor, because we're using the same barrels.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I love all these little secrets of tequila.
Another thing that we're also going to do at La Tequileria that's pretty cool is that we're going to be able to go in there, buy your bottle of tequila. You're going to be able to put your name on it. We'll put it a code, and we're going to store it in this beautiful library. So when you come back again and you have your friends with you, you can say, you know what, pull up my Don Julio 1942. I'm about to start sipping it with everybody else.
Interesting. Yeah, so it's like a cigar locker, like similar to what you'd find a cigar lounge.
Or what they do at wine lounges, too. We're going to have a beautiful glass locker set up, put them there, and we're also going to have a retail license. So we're going to get some really cool tequilas that you might not be able to find anywhere else and say, you know what, even if it's, and we're not just going, you know, extra añejo or very premium, but if you like a $30 bottle of tequila, you know what, take home a $30 bottle of tequila, you know?
I like that idea because a lot of times you're in a restaurant, you find something unique and you're like, oh, where did I get this?
Yeah.
And it only comes through a certain distributor.
Right.
So I think it's a cool idea. Now, how much do the lockers cost?
You know, we haven't really done too much research on it. We've been talking about doing it. So I'm not sure with this glass locker. Glass is expensive, but we're going to do it. I think it's something that people are going to go in and really want to go back to make sure, you know, go try out that bottle or go buy that bottle.
I want to go back to make sure nobody's drinking my stock.
No, we'll lock it up.
I'm going to take my little Sharpie and mark the level and say, nobody's touching this one here.
And in Mexico, they do that a lot. So if you go to a nice Mexican restaurant in Guadalajara, you order a bottle, they don't give you, you know, they'll bring the bottle, they'll mark it. This is where you started. This is where you ended. And that way they don't
really
keep coming.
So it's an honesty policy going on.
Yeah, we have to be very honest about it, yeah.
Well, I like what I'm hearing, guys. I mean, this sounds like a joint that I would like to hang out at and definitely try. When's the grand opening?
So Thursday we're doing a grand opening, and then we'll be open for the rest of the weekend. So this Thursday the 27th.
Wow, so it's coming on. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah. No, we've been getting after it for 4 or 5 months every day.
So have you had a couple soft openings already?
We have, yes. Okay. Last Thursday, last Friday, the week before. So we've been...
What did you learn in your... I mean, being in the restaurant business myself too, I was like, you learn a lot from these soft openings.
We need more people, more employees.
That's, you know, it's always really, really busy.
And I think we're going to have either a first shift, a second shift, because it is high volume, a lot of fun people, good-looking people coming in.
You guys have music?
Absolutely.
Live music?
Yeah, we're going to have his name's Jesus Ramos. He's going to open up on Thursday for us. He's the guy. He sang the national anthem at the Cell and at Wrigley last year with a mariachi.
Very talented.
So we're trying to do that vibe where, you know, English songs, Spanish songs, but he's going to come play with a jazz band.
Oh,
so
cool.
He's going to sing Mexican jazz. He's going to be there Thursday and Friday of this week.
Dave just chimed into my ear, said he's like Adele. He's the Mexican
Adele.
He's
unbelievable.
He sings amazing, gives you goosebumps.
Really? Yeah, no, he's impressive. Does. I'll send you some videos. And
please.
You should definitely, if you have time, come out.
Is he a Chicago-based artist?
Yeah, he's a police officer.
You're kidding.
Yeah, he's a railroad police officer.
Well, bring him back on the show.
Yeah, he's from Franklin Park. I mean, he's an incredible, talented guy.
Please. I mean, awesome. You guys got to come. Here's what's going to happen. Next time you come back, you're bringing him.
Yes.
You're bringing tequila.
Yes.
Your place is going to be rocking, right? And we're going to talk about it in a couple months how amazing you're doing.
Perfect.
Where's the website that people can find you at?
It's thetequileria.com.
Thetequileria.com.
Yep.
Dave, Elliot, thank you so much. This has
been
fun. Thank
you.
Appreciate it. Good luck to you guys.
Thank you
I think
much.
It's going to be a hit. I could tell already. And then when you're ready for LaGrange, let me know.
I definitely will.